Tonight, Ezra, chapters 5 and 6. Remember that Ezra is divided up into two sections. Chapters 1 through 6 represents the first return of the captives under the leadership of Zerubbabel. And that happened in 536 B.C. The second group that came back from the captivity to Babylon happened in 455 B.C., and that was with Ezra leading the way. And that's covered in Ezra chapters 7 through 10. So next time we'll start our study of the second group as they came back to Jerusalem. The third group came back in 445 B.C. Under the leadership of Nehemiah. And that return is covered for us, of course, in the book of Nehemiah. And just by way of interest, it's interesting that in the Hebrew Bible, both Ezra and Nehemiah are one book. It's kind of a combination book. It's entitled Ezra / Nehemiah. It's all one book because it covers all three stages. But Ezra was written, of course, by Ezra, Nehemiah by Nehemiah, and chapters 1 through 6 that we'll finish today is the group under Zerubbabel in 536 B.C. Chapter 7 through 10 is the group under Ezra in 455 B.C. And then Nehemiah bringing the third and last group in 445 B.C. And we'll get that study when we're in Nehemiah. You remember that when Zerubbabel came back and brought this group with him, that they came and they laid the foundation to the temple, dedicated it, began to offer sacrifices, and then began to build the wall around the city and the wall of the temple. And at the same time, people came from Samaria, led by two men, Rehum and Shimshai. Rehum was the commander and Shimshai was a scribe. Came to them and said, "We want to help you." Well, they said no, which is kind of interesting. You always make enemies when you say no, that God's work cannot be compromised. And we cannot let unclean people. Basically, that was the Jewish response. We cannot let non-Hebrew people participate in the building of the temple. That's the job God has given to us. And so they told them no, and it made them angry. So they tried to stop them from building. In fact, they sent a letter to Artaxerxes, the king, saying, "These people have always caused trouble. They have always rebelled against your leadership, the government. And if you search the records, according to the historical documents, it'll show that they've always rebelled. And so you had better stop them from building, because if they build this thing, they're not going to send taxes to you. They're going to keep the taxes, and they're going to rebel against your leadership." And so the king wrote a letter back saying that work is to be stopped. Indeed, they did search the records and found out that the children of Israel had been rebellious three different times. So they said, because of this, the work has to be stopped. And that takes us up to chapter 5. There has now been 16 years. And by the way, the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, they prophesied during this time. In fact, under the prophecies of Haggai and Zechariah, the people began to rebuild again after 16 years. God sent the prophets and they began to prophesy. And their prophetic books is called the Minor Prophets, but minor only in the length, not in the importance. The major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, they're called major because of the length of the books, not because of their importance. And the Minor Prophets, the last section of books in the Old Testament, are called the Minor Prophets, not because of their importance, but because of their length of the books. All of the prophets were important. Okay. Major in length versus minor in length, but not having anything to do with importance. So the prophet Haggai and the prophecies of Zechariah were all done during this time period that we're about to start. 16 years have gone by. It'll be 24 years altogether that it's going to take to rebuild and do the building project. 16 years were spent idle, but it's kind of interesting that when you read the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, is that they brought prophecies against the people because during the 16-year period, they ceased building the temple, but they concentrated on building their own homes. I mean, they used the materials that they were going to use for the temple. They said, well, they just can't lay around here wasting. We're having people challenge us, and the political system has stopped us from building the temple. So they began to use the materials for building their own homes. And God sent his prophets to say, you spend your time and your efforts building your own homes, and what about the house of God? Which I think is a very, very interesting how our, the concentration is on our own things first and on God's things second. But God says no. His is to be first. Ours is to be second. Even the building of his temple was to have top priority. Well, after 16 years, Zechariah and Haggai came and prophesied to the people, encouraging them to build. And that's where we're at right now. Chapter 5, verse 1 of Ezra. Then the prophet Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophets, they prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel who was over them. Interesting. Even in the Hebrew text, it emphasizes the fact that they came in the name of the God of Israel, the God of Israel who was over them. It's actually a preposition showing that God is always over his people, always overseeing them, always in charge. And it is now that God has chosen to speak, and he has sent Haggai and Zechariah to prophesy. The prophets have been sent by the God who is over them. So Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak. Now Zerubbabel, remember, he's the governor of Judah. He's the leader of this group of Israelites that have come back. He is now governor of Judah. And Jeshua. And Jeshua is the Aramaic spelling of the Hebrew Joshua. Same name. One is Aramaic. Ezra, by the way, was written in Aramaic. Jeshua is actually Joshua, equivalent to the Hebrew Joshua. Not the same Joshua that we studied that brought the children of Israel into the Promised Land, but this is Jeshua, the son of Jozadak. So Jeshua is the high priest of Judah. Zerubbabel is the governor of Judah. They rose up and began to build the house of God, which was in Jerusalem, and the prophets of God were with them, helping them. Now, just by way of clarification, because it sounds like maybe the prophets were in doing the craftsmanship, in doing the physical building. They were there helping them. But over in I think it's in chapter 6, verse 14, it says, so the elders of the Jews built, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo, and they built and finished it according to the commandment of God. So they weren't actually doing the physical work by helping. They were prophesying. That's how they helped them build. And by prophesying, every time the people would either get sidetracked, maybe challenges would come against them from the enemy to stop building the building, is that Haggai and Zechariah would be there to bring the message of God to tell them to keep going. So it was a message of prophecy as well as encouragement. And that while they prophesied, the people built. So just as a side note, at the end of verse 2, by helping them, it was not physical work. It was, according to chapter 6, verse 14, ministry work. They prophesied while the people built. Verse 3. At the same time, Tattenai, the governor of the region beyond the river, that is beyond the Euphrates, Tattenai is the governor of Persia, who is now ruling. He's the governor over the Samaritan region. So Tattenai, the governor of that region beyond the Euphrates, and Shethar-Boznai. Shethar-Boznai is one of his high officials. And their companions came to them and spoke this way to them. Who has commanded you to build this temple and finish this wall? Then accordingly, we told them the names of the men who were constructing this building. But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, so that they could not make them cease till report could be made to Darius. Darius is now leading and ruling. Then a written answer was returned concerning this matter. So it is interesting that as they came up, and there's a little phrase here at verse 5, the eye of God, the eye of their God was upon the elders so that they could not make them stop building. So it emphasizes even the more that the enemy came up to stop them before and they succeeded. Now God had his purposes. If you put this little section together with Haggai and Zechariah, sometimes sit down and read those two prophetic books, you get the picture here that God allowed the enemy to stop them. And it was God's purposes to test them. The test was, okay, what are you going to do? Well, they allowed the enemy to stop them, and while they were stopped from building and obeying the Lord, is that they began to build their own homes. And God says, see? Okay, well, we're going to work on this. That's something that God wanted to get straightened out. It took him 16 years to get it straightened out. Until finally, they were prepared to obey the commandment of the Lord no matter who came up against them. And it's kind of interesting, in verse 5, these two came up against them, Tatnai and Shethar-Boznai came up to stop them and said, who told you you could go here? Who told you you could start building again? Weren't you stopped? Didn't the king send a letter saying, cease from building because you're a rebellious people? And they asked for the names. In fact, verse 10 of this chapter, they asked for the names of the people who were in charge. You know, I guess that's part of the scare tactics. Whenever you walk up and say, give me your names. We're going to report you to the king. You guys aren't supposed to be building. Who told you to do this? But it says the eye of their God was upon them so that they couldn't get him to stop. Real different story here. Is that, and the emphasis is not just on them, it's on the Lord. The Lord would not allow the work to stop this time. So I take that, and even though it's not an excuse, I take that the Lord allows the enemy to stop sometimes, to stop the work, because he's got something to deal with. And yet at other times, the only way that we can continue on when the enemy challenges us or comes up against us, the only way that we can continue on is when the eye of the Lord's upon us so that it can't stop the enemy. So the Lord has his purposes all the way through. I'm reminded of Romans chapter 11 that basically tells us, in summary form, that even the disobedience of the Jews was ordained by God, so that the Gentiles would be grafted in. And as the Gentiles are grafted in, then the Jews would be saved. It's kind of a circle. That's just God's plan. That even disobedience is brought about by the Lord. Not sin and disobedience from Satan, but God actually allows it to stop God's work. And it never stops it always helps it. And it kind of goes back to Romans 8:28, where it says, God works everything for the good. To those that love Him are called according to His purpose. Not everything is good. I can remember a family in this church many years ago. They were affected by a Christian family. It was a wonderful Christian family down in the Atascadero. And they needed a handyman to help out around the house. The husband was away during the day and the wife and kids were at home and he didn't have time to do the gardening and do the maintenance and do some of the repair work on the house. And so they put out an advertisement for someone to help out, and someone answered the ad and they hired him to work around the house during the day. Well, it came to pass that when the husband came home one day, his wife and children had been killed by this man. And a brutal killing. And of course, the man was arrested and tried and sent off. But I can remember a family in this church actually withdrew from the Lord and was very bitter against the Lord and actually doubting, how can a God of love allow that to happen to one of His people? And it's a good question. I mean, you can't help but wonder it. God allows things to happen. He doesn't do it like James says in James chapter 1. God does not tempt us to sin. God doesn't make us sin. And He doesn't make it happen. He might allow it to happen, but Satan is the one who does it. But God has His purposes. God says God works everything, and I underline the emphasis, everything, for the good. He allows things to happen. Look at Job. When Satan, in Job chapters 1 and 2, when Satan came before Satan came before God. He says, you've put a hedge around Job and you've blessed him, and that's why he praises you. Let me touch his life and I'll show you that he'll curse you to your face. And he had his cattle stolen, he had his ranch harmed, he had houses destroyed, he even had family members killed. Satan brought this about, and God allowed it to happen as a test to Job, as to whether his love for the Lord was based upon a blessing or whether it was just based upon the fact that God is God. And the more I study the Scriptures, the more the Lord is revealing to me. As you see, we're reading historical accounts, but there are these parts that are inserted in there to tell us what God's doing. Either God allows it to be stopped because of disobedience or because of the enemy, or God makes it continue on no matter what the enemy does. It's kind of interesting. Everything depends on the Lord. So it says, verse 5, but the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews so that they could not make them cease till a report could go to Darius. Then a written answer was returned concerning this matter. This is a copy of the letter that Tatnai sent. The governor of the region beyond the river and Shethar-Boznai and his companions, the Persians, who were in the region beyond the river, to Darius the king. And they sent a letter to him in which was written this way. To Darius the king, all peace. Let it be known to the king that we went into the province of Judea, to the temple of the great God, which is being built with heavy stones and timber is being laid in the walls. And this work goes on diligently and prospers in their hands. So they're recognizing that God's blessing them, and they're letting Darius know this is prospering and this project is really moving along here. Then we asked those elders and spoke this way to them. Who commanded you to build this temple and to finish these walls? We also asked them their names so that we could inform you, that we might write the names of the men who were chief amongst them. So, you know, tell us your names. Who's responsible for you guys starting to rebuild? And we're going to put your names in a letter and we're going to report you. And thus they returned us an answer saying, we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and we are rebuilding the temple that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and completed. But because our fathers provoked the God of heaven to wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this temple and carried the people away to Babylon. Interesting how they're willing to admit that everything was destroyed in Jerusalem, and the temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, but they confessed it to be because of the rebellion of their own people and how God delivered them into judgment. Verse 13, however, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, King Cyrus issued a decree to build this temple. Also the gold and silver articles of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple that was in Jerusalem and carried into the temple of Babylon, those King Cyrus took from the temple of Babylon, and they were given to one named Sheshbazzar, whom he made governor. And he said to him, take these articles, go carry them to the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt on its former site. Then the same Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. But from the time even until now, it has been under construction, and it is not finished. Now therefore, if it seems good to the king, let a search be made in the king's treasure house, which is there in Babylon, whether it is so that a decree was issued by King Cyrus to build this house of God at Jerusalem. And let the king send us his pleasure concerning this matter. So what they're doing is that, number one, they're reporting the names to King Darius, hoping that that would scare them into stopping the rebuilding project. And secondly, they are confident that no letter exists. They are confident that the report that was given to them, that a decree came from Darius, actually Cyrus, does not exist. So he's asking King Darius to search the treasure house to see if indeed this document does exist. So they're taking a chance, because if it does exist, then it's going to defeat them. But if it doesn't exist, see, here we go again. Check the records. Where before it stopped them, whereas now it's going to backfire. Chapter 6. Then King Darius issued a decree. So verses 1 through 12 is the return letter of King Darius. He issued this decree. And a search was made in the archives, which is literally the scroll room, where the treasures were stored in Babylon. And at Akhmathah. Akhmathah is the Aramaic name for Ekbamatah. Ekbamatah was the former capital of the Medes. And so Akhmathah is the Aramaic name. In the palace that is in the province of Media, a scroll was found, and in it a record was written this way. In the first year of King Cyrus issued a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem, that the house be rebuilt, the place where they offered sacrifices, and let the foundations of it be firmly laid, its height 60 cubits and its width 60 cubits. The cubit being the distance between the elbow to the end of the little finger. 60 by 60. With three rows of heavy stones and one row of new timber. Let the expenses be paid from the king's treasury. So even the king was going to foot the bill for it. Also let the gold and silver articles of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took from the temple, which is in Jerusalem, and brought to Babylon, let them be restored and taken back to the temple, which is in Jerusalem, each to its place, and deposit them in the house of God. Now therefore, Tattenai, governor of the region beyond the river, and Shethar Boznai, and your companions, the Persians who are beyond the river, keep yourselves far from there. His decision is, you stay away from the building project. You leave them alone. We have found a letter. Indeed, what they have said is true. And in fact, this whole thing backfired on them. Because, remember, 16 years earlier, the complaint was that the Jews would rebuild and rebel against the Medo-Persian government and the king, and that they were going to keep the taxes for themselves and not give it to the king, and they were going to break off from everybody else, and they were going to go back to being their own people again. So that's why the building project was stopped. So these people are going to rebel. They've got rebellion in their history. And their money, they're not going to send us taxes. They're going to rebel. It is interesting now that not only does King Darius say, stay away from there, far away, but notice what else he says. Let the work of this house of God alone, let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build this house of God on its site. Moreover, I issue a decree as to what you shall do for the elders of these Jews for the building of this house of God. Let the cost be paid at the king's expense from the taxes on the region beyond the river. This is to be given immediately to these men so that they are not hindered. All the taxes. And so now what is interesting is that Tattenai, in collecting the taxes, he has to collect the taxes and he has to go give the money to the Jewish people. Remember the complaint earlier. The Jews would not pay taxes. It's interesting how God works things out. You know, that's a lie. And yet they were afraid because of the rebellious history of the Jews. So, and now interesting that 16 years later, now the king is not only reversing the decree and issuing a decree for the temple to be rebuilt and telling these people, you stay away from them. and you stay away from the building site. And moreover, all of the taxes that you collect in this region, after you collect them, you go and give it to them. Those taxes are going to go pay for the rebuilding of the temple. So it all backfired on them. Verse 9, and whatever they need, young bulls, rams, and lambs for the burnt offerings of the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, and oil, according to the request of the priests who are in Jerusalem, let it be given them day by day without fail. So whatever they're going to need for sacrifices, every single day for the operation of the temple, you are to give them materials as well. That they may offer sacrifices of sweet aroma to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his son. So he's actually saying, you know, they're going to be offering prayers up every day. And so for the king and his sons, making reference to King Darius, they're going to be praying for me. And so don't allow the sacrifices to be hindered. King Darius sees it as a good thing. Actually, for his benefit and the benefit of his country. And I issue a decree that whoever alters this edict, let a timber be pulled from his house and erected, and let him be hanged on it, and let his house be made a refuse heap because of this. And may the God who causes his name to dwell there destroy any king or people who put their hand to alter it, or to destroy this house. This house of God, which is in Jerusalem. I, Darius, issue a decree. Let it be done diligently. Boy, what a reversal, huh? God's hand certainly was upon them. God allowed them to be stopped before. God refuses to allow them to be stopped now. It's all the Lord. And it's all for the Lord's purposes. Verse 13. Then Tatnai, governor of the region beyond the river, Shethar-Boznai, and their companions diligently did according to what King Darius had sent. So the elders of the Jews built, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they built and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel, and according to the command of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Now the temple was finished on the third day of the month of Adar. That made it around February. It was February 18th, 516 BC, which was in the sixth year of the reign of King Darius. Then the children of Israel, the priests and the Levites, and the rest of the descendants of the captivity, celebrated the dedication of this house of God with joy. And they offered sacrifices at the dedication of this house of God, 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and as a sin offering for all of Israel, 12 male or he-goats, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. Now, just as a side note, because you might not know it just by reading through this text, but this section of Scripture, when the captives came back under Zerubbabel, they came back with the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. There are what are called the British Israelite religious group that claims that only two tribes returned back from captivity, and so there are 10 lost tribes. You've probably heard about the 10 lost tribes. It all comes from the book of Ezra, where Zerubbabel only brought back two tribes, so they say, you see. And there are 10 lost tribes, and one of those lost tribes is here in America, which means that the promise of Israel is also upon America. Whatever promises God gave for Israel is true for America, and then it's called British Israelism. And so, therefore, all the promises of God for Israel is for America. And that's, by the way, where all the American stuff came from, where people go back in the Old Testament and say, look, God promised Israel this, that if this nation would seek his face, that he would heal their land. Therefore, you know, that's true for America too. Well, that's not what it says. It says it's just for Israel. But there is British Israelism, which says that there are 10 lost tribes and that we are one of those lost tribes. We wound up here. The unfortunate thing about that is that even though Benjamin and Judah are listed as tribes that were brought, they were the leading tribes. But this text tells us in verse 17 that there were 12 he-goats given according to the tribes of Israel. How many tribes are there if there's 12 he-goats? There's 12 tribes. All the tribes were there. Benjamin and Judah were the leading tribes. You remember, they were the ones that were left over in the southern kingdom. They were the ones, there were more Benjaminites and those from the tribe of Judah than any other, because they were the last ones to be taken. There were more of them than anybody else. And so they were the leading two tribes. But all 12 tribes were there. See? Verse 18. They assigned the priests to their divisions and the Levites to their divisions over the service of God in Jerusalem, as it is written in the book of Moses. So again, obedience, back to doing things according to what God's word says. Verse 19. And the descendants of the captivity kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. And so 5 weeks later, they celebrate the Passover. It's been over 60 years that they have celebrated the Passover together in this way. For the priests and the Levites had purified themselves, all of them were ritually clean. And they slaughtered the Passover lambs for all the descendants of the captivity, for their brethren the priests, and for themselves. Then the children of Israel, who had returned from the captivity, ate together with all who had separated themselves from the filth of the nations of the land, in order to seek the Lord God of Israel. And they kept the feast of unleavened bread for 7 days with joy. And by the way, Passover is one day. The feast of unleavened bread begins the very next day after Passover, and it lasts for 7 days. The Passover was for, of course, the blood over the doorpost, which was parallel to salvation for us. The Feast of Unleavened Bread was, they were to go, now that they were saved by the blood of the Lamb, is that they were to go through their homes and get rid of any leaven for 7 days, because leaven represented sin. And that's why in 1 Corinthians 5, Paul brings out this fact about that Christ is our Passover Lamb that was sacrificed for us. So let's keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It was, now that we are saved, we ought to be conscious of keeping sin out of the household of God. You see, the conscious awareness. I think it'd be kind of neat for the body of Christ just to celebrate that feast every year. Not that it has any spirituality about it, but it makes you stop and think that now that we belong to the Lord, just because we're saved by grace and we're not under the law, doesn't mean we can do whatever we want to do. For 7 days, we have a reminder that we're to keep our house in order. Not just our physical house, but us personally, and the church house in order before God. So they kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days with joy, for the Lord made them joyful and turned the heart of the king of Assyria towards them, to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. That last little phrase again, another little phrase inserted into this historical account to show that not only were they celebrating the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but the Lord made them celebrate it with joy because they were celebrating the fact that God turned the heart of the king of Assyria towards them, and that's what strengthened them. It encouraged them to continue building. It always helps when there's cooperation and there's no hindrance. They attributed it to God. That God changed the heart of the king of Assyria and turned his heart to help them. They ascribed everything to be of the Lord. Interesting. Next week, we'll start with chapter 7. And we've got a couple more sessions to finish out the book. But we'll begin this second group that's going to arrive under Ezra. And that happened in 455 B.C., and that would be Ezra chapters 7 through 10. As we continue to study the history of how God works in the lives of His people and how His people have responded over the years. Same God works in our hearts. Same way. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Let's close with prayer.